just after 1 o'clock on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you back again for another day, another week of Smith and Jones. I had to let the music go a little bit longer there, Jonesy. I was chair dancing here as we get set for a full week and a busy day for you and I. As I just tweeted out, Smith and Jones times two. We're with you right now for the next hour until 2 o'clock, and then Baseball Central rolls around, and then you and I are back at it in a few hours at 6:30 Eastern tonight when we have the tip-off of the Bucks and Raptors from down in the bubble in Orlando. And Jonesy, I choose to start with the positive. You know me, some people might say I'm more negative. I like to think that I'm more realistic. I'm neither positive nor negative. I'm realistic about things. But I'm going to go the positive route today. I don't want to start on the negative tone of the Leafs. We will get to the Leafs in this show. You just heard a lot about the Leafs in the last hour on Hockey Central. We will talk about them over the course of maybe the next couple of minutes a little bit, but certainly in the second half of the show when Jeff Merrick joins us, and we will discuss the Leafs and all things NHL. But I want to start on the positive instead. And the Toronto Raptors, over the course of the weekend, just yesterday, in fact, officially clinching the number two seed in the East. Another 50-win season, five straight seasons, Jonesy, of 50 or more wins. And as we heard from, you and I had a chance to chat with Patrick Mutombo, one of the Raptor assistant coaches, over the course of the weekend, and I thought he made a great point that maybe isn't said enough. Winning is not easy. People are just kind of judging franchises in sports in general by championships, but winning is hard. And to do 50-plus wins in five straight seasons and now a seventh straight season in the postseason, especially for a club that had a long history of playoff droughts and misses and swings and misses and everything else, this is such a special moment in time that Raptor fans, basketball fans, are growing in and living in right now.
Eric, I got to tell you, and I said this before, those Raptor fans that were in the sixth or seventh or eighth grade when the Raptors were starting this playoff run against the Brooklyn Nets, and now they're teenagers or 20-year-olds. That's all they've ever known, really.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they've known. Success, playoffs, 50-win seasons. You and I can harken back to an era when we're talking about, can they get in at six? Can they make it in as high as six? Maybe they can, you know, be eight and get the experience. And it's hard to win. It's hard to win. And people make harsh judgments. Yes, it's pro sports and the bottom line is winning. But, you know, sometimes you have great seasons and the luck of the draw, the bounce of the ball, you know, the bounce of the puck, It doesn't go your way. A call doesn't go your way, and things don't turn out the way you want in terms of a championship or advancing. But that doesn't mean you throw the whole season out the window. So, you know, there are a lot of Raptor fans, like you said, that are just, as Patrick Mutombo says, they've grown used to this. Don't get used to it, because it's hard to do. You got to put your hat on every day and go out there and slug, because it doesn't happen by accident. And the better you are, the more teams look at you as the measuring stick and give you their best shot. This year, the Toronto Raptors got everybody's best punch because they were the defending champs. All the arenas were full to come and see them. All those teams were gassed up to play them. And yet still, here they are talking about 50 wins again.
Can I ask you a question here, Jonesy? Going back to yesterday's game, I'm always of the opinion is, you know, don't ask me how, just how many, or don't ask me how I got it done, just if I got it done. I'm calling out our producer here, Matt Marchese, and Matt, a fabulous host at the station as well. He wrote on our lineup today, Raptors clinch fifth in an ugly win over the Grizzlies. Would you have deemed that an ugly win yesterday, or did it just get ugly for a few minutes in the fourth quarter? How did you kind of wrap up what you saw from the Raptors yesterday in that victory over Memphis?
No win is ugly. Those guys get paid too. They get paid twice a month too, and they're pretty good. And if they weren't any good, they wouldn't be at this level. Now, you might have better, a little better talent, a little better chemistry, maybe a little better coaching, and you're never supposed to win. That's why you play the game. Anybody can beat anybody on any given night. And yeah, Toronto slipped a bit. They let it go a bit, but in the end, they came out on top. And you know, I'll never forget listening to my cousin who was, you know, an Olympic medalist. And when she was running the Grand Prix, And the Olympics was just basically another stop on the circuit. It's like the golf tour. There's four majors, but you're playing every week. And she would say there are some weeks when you go to, you know, you've been in Sweden one weekend, then the next weekend you're in Norway, then the next weekend you're in Germany, and it's just constant coming at you. And she said, I get to the start line and go, there's eight of us. Okay, I may not win today, but I'm not coming last. Like, I got to beat her, 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 and her, and maybe I'll be fourth today. Like, it's hard to do. It's a grind. You're never supposed to win. And I just think people take that for granted. And, you know, those guys get paid too, and they play hard too. So there's nothing that's given.
It's interesting as well, you know, when we look at this team, and as we've talked about now, five straight seasons of 50-plus wins. They did it under Dwayne Casey. They're now doing it under Nick Nurse. They did it under the Lowry and DeRozan regime. They did it last year with Kawhi. Now they're doing it without Kawhi and Danny Green this year with all the injuries coming in and out. This season, and you tell me if I'm off here, and I know we've talked a little bit about this, Jonesy, but this season feels a lot like last year in spite of the absence of Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green, because they're in the exact same position, Jonesy, as the number two seed. They're in a pool of teams that many people believe any one of whom could come out, whether it be Toronto or Milwaukee, Boston, and I think Philly now over the course of the weekend with the injuries to Ben Simmons and now Joel Embiid as well, they probably have taken quite a bit of a dip back. So it's kind of maybe a three-team race in a sense right now in most people's minds. But then always looming is, well, who may come out of the West? Last year it was the Warriors. This year it's the Lakers-Clippers. There's always the looming threat of a Houston. But it's almost like you could kind of transfer everything that was being talked about last year about the Raptors and about the league to this moment right now, as they are getting set for the postseason to begin 1 week today, much of the same questions, both pro and con, surrounding the Raptors and the league exist again, as I say, right now, as they did if we go back to, you know, April, mid-April of 2019.
You're right, Eric. And along with that come the same, quote, doubts, unquote, about the Raptors. And maybe they're even being magnified now because there's no Kawhi Leonard. But it does feel a lot like last year, where people are looking at them and saying, okay, they're good in the regular season, but there's still lots to prove. There's still a ways to go come playoff time. And I think the team feels that. I think you're going to see them. I think you're going to see some solid performances come playoff time.
So we're going to talk a little bit more about the Toronto Raptors in mere moments when Michael Grange from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca joins us. And again, later on in the show, we will talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs and kind of look ahead to the NHL postseason as well. And tonight's draft when we're joined by Jeff Merrick. But again, more on the Toronto Raptors in a couple of moments with Michael Grange. And again, Jonesy and I have the call tonight, the tip-off at 6:30 Eastern right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan between the Raptors and the Milwaukee Bucks. And we can let you know that's early word at least coming out of the Raptors. And this isn't necessarily a great surprise. And listen, some of these guys may or may not suit up, but we already know that O'Shea Brissett is out with a right knee issue. Patrick McCaw out and probably out for quite some time, if not the entire postseason. We'll kind of await and find out if that's the case with his left knee issue. But then also tonight, folks, questionable Serge Ibaka, right knee contusion. Questionable Kyle Lowry, lower back soreness. Questionable Fred VanVleet, right knee hyperextension. I'm not surprised by this, Jonesy, because of the fact that the Bucks are locked in at one, the Raptors are locked in at two. You want to make sure guys are ready and not rusty for the postseason, but at the same time, you don't want to risk the possibility of any further injuries over these last three games, which essentially, as far as the standings, are meaningless. There is still meaning in terms of preparation and getting your body ready, but in terms of standings and whatever else, these are meaningless games that the Raptors are facing over the last three.
Yeah, I think there's a balance there, as you said, Eric. They're meaningless, but you know, maybe you give the guys some run a little bit because you're not going to be practicing a lot. You'll be, you know, doing a lot of walkthroughs, a lot of video, especially when you get to the playoffs. But I think you're going to see those guys go for a bit, and then you shut them down. You take the car out of the garage, run it around the block a couple times, make sure everything's working, and then put it back. And I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen with the Raptors.
All right, joining us on the line right now from Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca, our colleague Michael Grange. Michael, thanks for the time today.
No problem, fellas. How are we?
Good. Doing well, Michael. I'm going to ask you a hockey question before we let you go, but we're staying with the basketball theme here because, as I said off the top of the show, we're staying with the positive news first in the Toronto Raptors in the number two seed. Michael, when you kind of look back now, even including the last 4.5 months, 5 months during the pandemic and the shutdown and everything else, but when you look at just the season in general, going back to October of 2020, or excuse me, of 2019, how do you kind of wrap up what the Raptors have been through? Getting and dealing with the absence of Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green and getting on the floor and starting the season and then going through the injuries and everything that kind of culminated in where we stand now at yet another 50-plus win season.
Well, I would first of all point out that it's really a 60-win season. I mean, that's what their winning percentage suggests. And, I think calling it a 50-win season is a bit of a – sells it a bit short considering they're going to play – just about 72 games or whatever it is, or I don't know what the number, not enough. I think it's been amazing. I mean, it's exceeded, I think, even most optimistic expectations. I think I thought they'd be in that sort of 50-54 win range. I thought that was an honest appraisal and based on them doing very well last year without Kawhi Leonard in the lineup and all those kinds of things. But, you know, you're replacing the best player in the game. You're replacing in Danny Green, you know, an elite role player who's won multiple rings and is in a good position to win another ring this year, potentially. And, you know, you didn't replace them. They just walked out of your team. That's 40% of your starting lineup. And, to expect that they would be, you know, a better team by every measure statistically now than they were, no one could have anticipated that. And then, as you point out, you throw in the number of injury man games lost injury and think, and not just how many people were injured, but who was injured. It's absolutely remarkable. And I think a couple of things that jump out to me are, Norm Powell, although he hasn't been great in, since really, I mean, he was good the other night, but he's been just so since the restart. Who knows? Right? Like, he might have had this season last year had Danny Green not arrived. In other words, he clearly was a player ready for a bigger role. I don't think we probably thought that Fred VanVleet had another gear in him. I thought we all kind of thought he was a neat player, a good point guard, a good complimentary piece, all those kinds of compliments we dole out to players who we probably put a ceiling on. Of course, Fred's never put a ceiling on himself, and he's exceeded those expectations. And we were just getting, as the season kind of was interrupted, a real good look at the upside, the ceiling of OG Anunoby. I thought he had a good year, but was trending towards a great year. And, of course, he's picked up more or less where he's left off. So, it's been a tremendous, tremendous season. And I think whatever happens shouldn't ever kind of spoil that. I thought the Raptors spoiled us by what they put on the floor night after night.
Michael, that's a point that I made with Eric early on. You know, the kids that were 11 or 12 when this 7-year run started, and if I'm not mistaken, it is the longest consecutive run of playoffs in the East. And it could be near the top when I think about San Antonio. They've creeping closer, but they're still not in yet. I mean, people have been spoiled, and it's, you know, we were talking about that Patrick Mutombo telling it's hard to win. It really, really is. And, you know, people want to measure in championships, but, you build something that's stable and viable. And, you know, people talked about the Atlanta Hawks for years. They were in the playoffs and they couldn't convert. Well, I'd rather have a chance every year than trying to piece it together.
I agree. And I do agree. I mean, it is difficult to win. A lot of things have to be done. But I think what you do demonstrate, and I think what the Hawks demonstrated, I think what Marc Gasol's, Memphis Grizzlies demonstrated, I think those are what I think Indiana over more or less has demonstrated, although there's been a lot of turnover there, is it isn't, I think if you get your culture right, you can be a good NBA team. And the Raptors absolutely have their culture right. I think those examples I cited, they got their culture right. And, you obviously you need good players and good characters to make that happen. And that kind of gets you in that 45 to 50 plus win category, right? Not everyone can do it. There's just so many forces pulling teams apart versus bringing them together, financial, character, role, you know, human nature, that it's easier said than done. But you don't need to be, I think that's maybe the greatest lesson the Raptors have given the NBA, is you do not have to be a team that's stacked with, quote, superstars to be a really, really good team. Now, taking that next step, which is what the Raptors were able to do last year, remarkably, but in a way that we identify, right? Like they had in Kawhi Leonard, that single player that everyone would acknowledge is top three or four or five in the game. You know, that's the way to do it. If they can do it this year, it will be, I think, one of the most amazing feats we'll see in NBA history. And not to say that they can't, the mountain they're climbing is too high, and it's you know, these are the, you know, the Bad News Bears, or, you know, the Mighty Ducks, or whatever you want to call it. Just that to go out and win a title without a player that would be widely acknowledged as top 15 in the league, maybe top, like Lowry, Mike Siakam, they might be top 10 players, but, you know, they might not be. And, you know, if they can do it on these terms, the way that to me is a tremendous lesson about the power of intelligence, commitment, teamwork, character. And, you know, I think it should be embraced.
Speaking with Michael Grange from Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca. Michael, further to that point, what do you think ultimately has led to the collective buy-in, not just this season, but the last couple of seasons, the last number of seasons, where you have these guys on the same page? You have guys willing to, you know, not worry necessarily about who's doing the scoring, willing to morph defensively within a game, diving for loose balls, just bringing it every night, just that collective buy-in that seems to exist from top to bottom on this team, where you don't necessarily see that same cohesion or that same buy-in on a lot of other clubs in the league?
It's a great question. I think there's probably a couple of different ways to go at it. I mean, one, it probably starts with Kyle Lowry as a guy who, you know, figured that out at some point over his career, and certainly in his time in Toronto. And he kind of, I think there's a point in NBA players, I think most pro athletes, but I think in the NBA especially, where you kind of, you know, you're very driven by, you know, trying to establish yourself, you know, as a player at some point in your career. And then, you know, once you do, and it's a little bit financial, it's a little bit reputational and all of that, then, you know, then everything else becomes, you know, more important again. And I'm not saying those things weren't important. Those kind of softer issues weren't important to Kyle earlier in his career, but he arrived at a very stable place professionally and was able to kind of, all the things he stands for were you know, became examples for everybody. And then I think the young people, young players that came in, I think none of them came in with expectations, right? You know, Pascal Siakam was, you know, a mid-20s NBA pick. OG Anunoby, same thing. Fred VanVleet, undrafted. And so none of those guys are kind of coming in expecting that they, you know, they all have to earn whatever they're going to get, because they have no realistic expectation of being given anything, having anyone, you know, design things for their behalf and all of that. So I think that helps. And then, you know, the superstar you did get last year, Kawhi Leonard, you know, he was an ego-driven guy. He was all business. And I think that was a great example. There's a guy who took them to the promised land, so to speak, who was at the highest level of the game and did it without kind of a me-first attitude. I think that probably was revealing. Like, okay, look, that's what it looks like. And then, you know, obviously then you get Marc Gasol walking into your locker room, who's as team-orientated as any player you'll find. There's another lesson. So at a certain point, you get enough people who are walking that walk that anyone who doesn't is, you know, they stand out for all the wrong reasons. And so people kind of, you know, for anyone who might want to veer a different way, they kind of look around and go, you know, peer pressure is, it can be positive pressure too. And I think that's certainly what's going on here.
Michael, we know what's going on contractually at the end of this year. You know, you build it, you make it, you put it together, you build it in such a way that it's sustainable, and you've got the championship window open for a few years. What do you do going forward with all these guys that are up? You know, the money is, the salary cap's going to decrease because of the revenue. You're still trying to hang on to guys. Your championship window's open. You're trying to keep it open. Like, what are you doing going forward? And I agree with you. You mentioned a key word in there, culture. And it's that nebulous word that we can't define. And to me, it's a way of doing things with expectations attached because you've had success. So they have this culture, but they might have kind of priced themselves out of it. What do you do going forward with all the guys that are up this year?
I mean, short answer, I don't know, right? Because there's just so many variables regarding, you know, the salary cap because of revenue pictures throughout the league and all of that. But, you know, if you look at examples of other organizations that have sort of been in the situation, let's take for an example the Spurs. You know, they found ways, right, to get things done, to keep those the window open, to take care of players. And players, I think the ultimate expression of your culture is players are able to put a certain value on it, right? So, you know, do you absolutely need to make the most money and the most term? And if that's your number one priority over everything else in your professional life, which is totally reasonable, right? Like, I'm not faulting anyone for that. Then, you know, that might lead a player to make a certain set of decisions. But if you can kind of look around and go, you know what, this is all these things we've just talked about. There are still great opportunities here to win. Maybe there's a compromise that can be reached. Maybe it doesn't have to be absolute dollar. Maybe it doesn't have to be absolute term. Maybe a player like Marc Gasol says, you know what, like, I don't know if I really want another 3-year contract because, you know, I want the freedom maybe after another 1-year deal to go back to Spain or whatever it might be. You know, those are kind of the discussions that I'm sure might get explored. You look at Serge Ibaka, his value is probably really high. Relative to what maybe people thought it was going to be a couple of years ago. But how did his value got high, right? It was because he was in this situation. He looks like, he has never been happier as an NBA player. He loves the city. He loves the market. So does that mean he has to take, you know, but that said, it's probably his last big deal. So how do you balance all those things? So I don't think there's a formula there, Jonesy. I think there's a lot of conversations that need to be had. And I think the one thing I would say is with confidence is I think you could bring a pretty close facsimile of this team back and right. Be very, very good again. Like, I don't see any wear or tear on Kyle Lowry. I don't see him slowing down. I don't see Marc Gasol slowing down. I don't see, I think obviously the best basketball is ahead for Fred VanVleet, for OG Anunoby. Pascal Siakam's under contract. Terrence Davis is an interesting piece now that we didn't anticipate before. So, I think if we were having this conversation last summer, last August, we would have been very much, well, this is the last row. We'll see what we can squeeze out of these guys with, you know, losing Kawhi and Danny Green. It's probably not going to be all that much. They'll put it, you know, they'll finish fifth and then you sell off the parts. Like, that was a legitimate conversation. Maybe, you start picking this team apart at the trade deadline. They didn't. And I think you could go into whatever the off season, I was going to say the summer, and say, you know what, we're going to run it back. And I think with confidence, you could be a good team again. So I don't think there's as much urgency or pressure to as there might have been, because I think you have a lot more good choices.
Speaking with Michael Grange, Michael, admittedly, this is sort of the captain obvious question, but based on everything you just said, assuming you're able to run it back, assuming that theory is something that ultimately happens for the Raptors, if you were to prioritize, are we at the point where if you're the Raptors, you simply cannot afford to lose Fred VanVleet, because as good as Kyle Lowry is right now, you still have to factor in not only age but length of term in terms of the 1 year left on his contract, and kind of project to the future and say, well, who's running this organization? Who's our point guard of the future? You have to keep Fred VanVleet more than anybody else at this point.
I wouldn't say of
the free agents.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily go so far as saying that. I mean, it, again, it comes down to money and term. I think, you know, you want to make every effort to sign Fred. The last thing you want to do is to have a situation where he leaves in some kind of if he leaves because he feels insulted or hasn't been fairly dealt with, which there's no real track record of that here. So I think you'd want to avoid that. But, you know, if a team is going to offer him, you know, just to, you know, a really special contract, then, you know, I don't think you're obligated to match that deal. I think it's just too complicated for that. But I don't know if there is, just as we talked about earlier, given the economics of the situation, there might not be that special contract out there. And maybe Fred thinks, you know what, maybe my best scenario is another kind of 2 year, you know, maybe big money short term, and live to fight another day in the market. So you might not have to make that decision. But, you know, if you really believe in your culture, you know, it's bigger than any single player. That's the other side of it too, right? And so I don't think you want to be in a situation where you're, you know, spending. Look, I mean, I don't think there's really much bad money to be spent on Fred VanVleet. He's a pretty special guy. But, besides Jerry has shown, he does go into these deals with a number. And it's a fair number. It's usually a pretty smart number. He's been proven right more than not. And you know, if that number doesn't get it done, then I don't think it's the end of your franchise if Fred VanVleet ends up having to move on.
Michael, I know we got to take a break here quickly, but I just wanted to jump in and say I agree with you wholeheartedly on the culture thing. And I look at places like, well, Miami, where for years Dwayne Wade took less, and he finally got tired of the culture and then took the deal to go to Chicago.
And where did he end up?
You know, yeah, he came back. Pat Riley, they had a billboard in Miami. We'll leave a key under the mat for you. You know, and in San Antonio, where you get guys like Duncan and people to take a little bit of a home downtown discount to keep it together. And it'll be interesting to see, because I think the Raptors have built a culture here, and it will be interesting to see if that kind of shows through.
Agreed. I mean, you know, but these things are also fluid, and I would never fault a player ever for, you know, doing what's best for them. Their windows are so short, and you know, and it's not like they owe anyone any kind of discount. It is a question of measuring value. It really is that, because the way the league is built, you can't really pay everybody what they all deserve, what they all would like. It forces you into choices as an organization, and, you know, as a player, I think it requires you to put a certain value on opportunities that don't necessarily have a dollar tag on them. But again, those are all very individual choices.
Michael, we appreciate the time today, and you'll be part of the coverage tonight on Sportsnet. Sportsnet has the TV coverage of the Raptors and Bucks tonight, 6 o'clock Eastern, the pregame show, 6:30 tip-off, and myself, Jonesy, have the call on the radio as well, beginning at 6:30. Thanks for this, and we'll talk soon.
Pleasure. See you guys.
Thanks, Michael.
There is Michael Grange from Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca. Jonesy, we will take the break and shift our attention from the positive news, well, to the not-so-positive. And the Toronto Maple Leafs, in the loss last night, bounced from the qualifying round. They're not in the postseason. And we will try and dissect it all with Jeff Merrick when we continue on Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. We turn our attention to the number 2 seed in the East, the Toronto Raptors, and another 50-plus win season, and a Toronto Maple Leafs team that unfortunately now is on the outside looking in. They did not qualify for the postseason. They lose 3-0 last night in Game 5 against the Columbus Blue Jackets. And another year of frustration for Leaf fans and a whole lot of questions now in terms of what to make of this team and what this club could look like when they next take to the ice, whenever that may be, to try and break it all down and answer some of those questions. Pleased to be joined now by the man from the NHL on Sportsnet, 31 Thoughts, Hockey Central, the list goes on, Jeff Merrick. Jeff, thanks for the time today.
Smitty, Jonesy, how are you guys doing today? Thanks for having me
on. Good, Jeff. Good.
We're good.
It's a sad day for Leaf fans. I mean, that was so Leafs. You know, you're dead in the water. You're dead in the water in Game 4, and people are like, well. And then they give you just a little bit of hope, Merrick, just a little bit, and then it's snatched away at the end.
It was kind of like the season. Like, you look at, I mean, there's a lot of players that underperformed this season. You know, outside of Austin Matthews all season long, pretty much everybody had underwhelming years based on expectations and their slot on this team. And, you know, there were the lows of losing to the Carolina Hurricanes with David Ayers in net. There was that road trip in Philadelphia where they laid the egg against the Florida Panthers. But whenever they would have these kinds of games, guys, the one story that was pretty consistent all year long with the Maple Leafs, whenever they would lay an egg, they come back with a beauty. You know, they come back and, like, you know, dust the Tampa Bay Lightning and look phenomenal in the process. So you're right. Like, they give you that sort of little glimmer of what they could be when they all put it together. There's that game around Christmas against the Carolina Hurricanes where they go up 3 pucks and then they're down 2 pucks and then there's a great third period. And Mitch Marner's got 5 or 6 points and they put Matthews and Marner together and it's glorious and it's an 8-6 game right out of the pages of 1983 and you say, well, that's the Maple Leafs under Kyle Dubas as, you know, playing the way that Sheldon Keefe wants them to. But, like, it was an entire bizarre year for the Maple Leafs, a lot of underperformance and the playoffs themselves. Like, when you sort of start to comb through the numbers, because there's going to be a full evaluation done on every player here. There always is at the end of every season, as you guys well know. What they're going to find about this series against the Columbus Blue Jackets is the Maple Leafs did more things right than they did wrong. The problem was the one thing they did wrong is they couldn't get that round black thing over the red line. You know, you look at all the underlying numbers, everything. And Sheldon Keefe, you know, talked about it yesterday at a press conference with the shooting percentage. Like, over the course of a 5-game series, there's a chance that it might be low, and it was. Does it sustain like that? No. But nobody wants to hear that right now in Leafland. All they want to hear is, we're a volcano. We demand a sacrifice. What are you going to give us? So, yeah, you're right. It's a sad day for Maple Leafs fans, but as horrible as it may sound, it's one they've sort of grown accustomed to at playoff time.
Jeff, I said I was going to ask Michael Grange this before we let him go. He was our last guest on the show, and he tweeted this out last night. But I'm going to use it to ask my question to you. Grange last night tweeted out, and I think I don't know if he's a Leaf fan, but I know he keeps an eye on the Leafs and has certainly covered hockey and the Leafs before as well. He pulled out the quote from Josh Donaldson from a few years back, and he tweeted out, it's not the try league, it's the get it done league. So it's not fair for me to ask you, who do you point the finger at? Because it's not just one person. And you just touched on some of the issues overall. But if you were to give me a few names, or if you were to say there's more blame pointed in this direction, are we talking management, coaching, players? Are we slicing up the pie and giving everybody? I mean, for the fan that's really annoyed and angry today, where should they be directing their heat?
I think you have, like, honestly, I don't know that you make decisions on anybody until the cement has hardened. Like, we've seen general managers rush off to decisions just based on emotions. And right now, Smitty, as you all know, nerves are close to the skin for the Maple Leafs. Like, they want sacrifices. They want this guy traded. They want this guy fired. They're sick of this guy. And I think sane organizations say, go away for a while. You know, like, I don't think anyone looks at the Maple Leafs right now and says the cement has hardened here. We know the decisions. I think one of the things that's really going to hurt the Maple Leafs, though, is the flat salary cap. I mean, all the signings that Dubas has made was predicated on the idea that the cap was going up, and pretty much everybody believed that. And then COVID-19 happened. As far as blame, you know, some of the high priced help. I mean, in the playoffs against Columbus, everyone not named Matthews and Tavares I think, can have some fingers pointed at them. You know, Mitch Marner is shouldering a lot of the blame for underproduction. I think William Nylander is shouldering some blame for lack of production as well. The blue line composition, like the Tyson Barrie deal, is looked at as kind of being a whiff. You know, the depth scoring wasn't there by the end. I think there's a lot of blame to go around. I think the goaltending, Smitty, I think is a big one, because, I mean, there were a couple of soft goals. I mean, the Liam Foodie goal last night was a tough one for Frederik Andersen, but there are a couple of goals along the way that you look at and you say that Anderson's just got to flat out make that save. They were getting those saves from Jonas Korpisalo. Smitty, I'm not convinced that the Maple Leafs are sold that Frederik Andersen is their guy. And he's got one more year left on term. Don't know what happens there with that player, with that position. I just don't know whether the Maple Leafs are convinced that Frederik Andersen has enough to out-duel a goaltender in a playoff round, because so far he hasn't been able to.
Hey, Jonesy, let me jump in for 1 second here just to further amplify that point. And I don't know if you saw it or not. And Jeff, I'm guessing maybe you brought it up last night, but Sportsnet Stat sent out the tweet last night. Leafs Frederik Andersen, last 8 potential series-clinching games. Record, yeah. 0-8. Save percentage, .877, and a goals against of 3.49. That kind of speaks to what you were just talking about.
Yeah, and whether, I mean, there seems to be a sort of frustration there with Frederik Andersen. That's sort of palpable when you talk to anybody around the organization. Now, is Jack Campbell going to step in and be the answer? We don't know. We haven't seen the entire body. We haven't seen a huge body of work yet from Jack Campbell. Looked great coming out of junior with the Windsor Spitfires and the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds, but hasn't been able to grab a number one spot yet. I think he'll be given a chance with the Maple Leafs if they don't address their goaltending situation a different way. But I don't think that the Maple Leafs are, 100% that this is going to be their guy. And when the moment comes, they're going to sign him to a contract extension. I think, if anything, it's the opposite.
Jeff, are we, as Leaf fans, guilty of overvaluing the guys? Like when you talk about free agency coming back and that, you know, you talk about Andersen. Well, it's like, well, who do you get? Like, who's better? I mean, there's that kind of, you know, they always say, don't fall in love with the house. It's only real estate. You can find another one. Yep. Are Leaf fans, or is there anybody in management that you think might be guilty of that? You really have to step back and, as you said, let the concrete harden.
Yeah, don't you think that all teams do that? I'm not sure. Is this true in basketball as well as it is in hockey, that, you know, you tend to over... I mean, hockey's always been guilty, as far as I've been led to believe, more so than any other sport, general managers overvaluing their players. And that's why, one of the reasons why we see so little movement, so few trades around the NHL, is because everybody overvalues their players. As far as the goalie market goes, I mean, you've got Braden Holtby of the Washington Capitals, who will be a free agent. You have Corey Crawford of Chicago, who will be a free agent. You have Robin Leonard. Like, there are some names that are out there. The problem that the Maple Leafs are going to have is they just don't have room. Like, unless they're going to move one of the big-ticket guys, or even a couple of the medium, you know, Andreas Johnsson, Kasperi Kapanen-type players, you're just not going to have room to bring anybody in. Like, as much as Maple Leafs fan, I pain anyone listening to this right now who's a diehard Maple Leafs fan that wants change, as much as this may pain Maple Leafs fans to hear this, they may have to come back next season with pretty much the exact same team, outside of the guys that are going to leave in free agency, whether it's Cody Ceci or Tyson Barrie or Kyle Clifford, and maybe you plug in a Mikko Lehtinen, and Rasmus Sandin is on the blue line, and Alex Barabanov and Nick Robertson are up front. This may be it. Like, you may be frozen out of making moves unless you decide to move one of the big ticket guys. And the problem there is, in this salary cap, well, flat salary cap universe, every dollar out is probably coming right back your way, which makes making moves that much tougher and almost impossible for a team like this. Like, Toronto's going through this. The Pittsburgh Penguins are going through this. The Nashville Predators are going through this. I mean, a lot of teams that want to make moves that are just frozen now because of the flat cap.
Speaking with Jeff Merrick. Jeff, I'm going to walk a fine line here. Jonesy and I both are not big fans of fantasy trades and the call-in shows of, hey, let's trade this guy for that guy and whatever. That said, I'm going to bend my rules slightly a little bit here.
Okay.
If there's one guy that you think, as we talked about towards the top there, of pointing the fingers, and you said Marner's taking a lot of heat and Nylander's taking a lot of heat, if there's one guy that you would say is potentially on a hotter seat than the other, but also A is maybe quote-unquote expendable, but then also still carries value in terms of, yes, he could bring us what we may need, what we think we may need in return. Is mm-hmm. there one guy that you think is more of a candidate than another?
I don't think it'd be one of the big ticket players, Smitty. I think it would be a Kasperi Kapanen or an Andreas Janssen, freeing up cap space to make a move on the blue line. And maybe it's one, like, I don't think they're going to have enough money to do anything with someone like Alex Pietrangelo, who's an unrestricted free agent. And who knows, he may end up at the end of this, you know, re-signing with the St. Louis Blues. But maybe someone like TJ Brody of the Calgary Flames, bring in a defenseman of that quality into the blue line. And I think that those, you know, a movement of a player, not of the first tier, but your second tier salary structure, might be able to create some wiggle room where Kyle Dubas can bring a player like that in. But it's, trust me, it's going to be tough to move any of the big deals. Because the one thing about playing in Toronto is that there are no secrets about your game. Like, you are on Hockey Night in Canada, you are on all the highlight shows, you're the most followed team in the NHL. Everybody knows everything about you in every single market. Nobody hides in Toronto.
I just find it interesting, Jeff, because, you know, you can't go on like this. You can't keep, you know, they do a great job at times of selling hope, the Leafs.
Yeah.
But that has to turn into something. It can't be, you know, the fan base is downtrodden now. Give it a couple months and we'll be hearing about how this guy looks after the summer and, well, the off season. We're in the summer now, but
Jonesy, I do it all the time, by the way. I do that all the time, by the way, Jonesy. I keep catching myself.
Oh, I know. And then, I mean, what's wrong with this? I'm watching the Stanley Cup playoffs in August. And like, all of those things that we talk about, Jeff. And, you know, there's a little deal and the expectations are high for this minor move. And they sell the hope again, but it just doesn't get done. Like, at what point do you get past that? And do you make some really hard decisions going forward?
Well, I think that they will probably start having that conversation at 6:31 Eastern tonight, after we know where Alexi Lafreniere is going. Because if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs and you win the lottery tonight, all of a sudden you have a lot more options. And you have the ability maybe to make different deals based on having that first overall pick. So I think I don't think that there's a major move that you can make. Maple Leafs fans kind of got spoiled with the Doug Gilmour trade, because Maple Leafs fans going back to the early 90s believe that they're, you know, with one trade, you know, the genius Cliff Fletcher, you can totally turn a franchise around. Those days are gone. Like, Brian Burke always talks about general managers used to be pirates, where they tried to rob the next guy. Ha ha, I got him on that deal. You know, general managers don't behave like that anymore. They're more interested in having long-term trading partners, long-term business partners, long-term relationships with other general managers. Nobody wants to skin each other in this game. So that's why those franchise-changing deals don't necessarily happen. I think Maple Leafs fans, to Smitty's point a second ago about the call-in shows and the dangers of you know, let's do an hour on fantasy trades here, are, you know, totally missed the point that general managers don't try to destroy each other like that anymore, that they behave differently. And there is no miracle trade out there that's going to completely turn around the fortunes of the Toronto Maple Leafs. They've made their bet. Like, the Kyle Dubas philosophy is skill will prevail. The game is evolving towards being more skill-based than ever before and less physical. And although there is still physicality in the playoffs, it is certainly a lot less than we've seen in the past 10 or 20 seasons. And his belief is any chance you get to upgrade any position, no matter what it is, with skill, you make that deal. You make that trade, whether it's a call-up, whether it's a free agent signing, or whether it's a trade, you do that. That is his philosophy. That's why, you know, the Maple Leafs are always considered one of the most highly skilled forward units in the NHL. I mean, that's what he's been handed. Like, we tend to forget here. Like, one of the unspoken things, Dubas has taken a lot of heat for, you know, play. Now, he did sign the contracts, but he's taken a lot of heat for players that he didn't draft. You know, a lot of this is still Lou Lamoriello Maple Leafs. A lot of these are, you know, Mark Hunter when he ran the draft decisions. I mean, Kyle Dubas only took over as a full-time general manager where he held the pen and made the decisions going back to May of 2018. So as much as there are the howls out there for Dubas this and analytics that, and, you know, he's only been at this as the full-time general manager for a couple of seasons here. So I don't know that there's one thing that Dubas can do to, quote-unquote, fix any of this, Jonesy. I think, as I mentioned earlier, as palatable as it may be, this is your team. This is who you're going in there with, and it is a highly skilled forward unit. And you hope that if you're a Maple Leafs fan that it all comes together for them sooner than later.
Jeff, we appreciate the time. Thanks for this, man, and stay safe and healthy. We'll talk again soon.
Go Raptors.
Yes, sir. There's Jeff Merrick. Listen, the Jays are still in it, no doubt. 5-8 as they get set to christen Salem Field in Buffalo, and we're starting to see a lot of the pictures and videos circulating online. So, you know, check out Twitter and some of the fine folks in the Sportsnet baseball department that are sending up pictures and videos if you want to see the latest there. But there's no denying a lot of eyes are now shifting their attention, if they weren't already on them, to the Toronto Raptors with the Leafs now out. This is certainly a Raptor city as much as it was last year, and certainly even more so than it was maybe, you know, 24, 48 hours ago with hockey fans, Leaf fans specifically, looking for something else now. We're going to take the break, come back, get set to wrap things up, Jonesy, on Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith & Jones, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you, getting set to wrap up. And Jonesy, the National Hockey League about 30 minutes ago announced their latest round, their latest results of testing for COVID-19 of over 7,200, almost 7,300 tests administered over the course of the last week. Zero positive tests. The NHL has now done nearly 20,000 tests, no positive cases. So the bubble holding in Edmonton, Toronto, and obviously down in Orlando for the NBA as well.
I like that. It's a way that we can kind of keep sports going, and you know, get them back into swing. But what I'm worried about is next year still, buddy. I don't know about you. What comes next?
I'm still wondering. We'll figure that out maybe tomorrow or in future shows. Thanks again to Jeff Merrick, Michael Grange, to our crew, and to all of you. We're back again together at 6:30 with the Bucks and Raptors. Thanks for tuning in to Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.